Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Welcome to the 13th episode of our Strategy and Insider podcast. My name is Thomas, and I'm the host of this podcast, as well as a partner with Strategy and. I'm happy to share that our podcast attracts an ever-growing number of listeners, and I do truly appreciate every single one tuning in to our conversation. And also, thanks for finding your way into today's session, which I'm sure you won't be disappointed by. As you know, with our podcast, we aim to explore what the future of healthcare might look like, especially with regard to new technologies, but also players in this market. And we already had a number of guests representing those new players and discussed with them what it means to be kind of the new kid on the block, like Dan Vedat, who is the founder of the digital health startup Yuma. He basically told us that passion, naivety, and perseverance were his main drivers leading to the success of his company. And as we see, there are many questions, especially for those new entrants in the market, which also include tech players like Amazon, Apple, and Google making their way into healthcare. And this is why I'm absolutely thrilled that my guest today agreed to come onto our podcast. So a very warm welcome to Ashima Gupta. Ashima is the Director for Global Healthcare Solutions at Google Cloud. And this capacity, she is working at the intersect of health and technology, accelerating the digital transformation in healthcare with a special focus on customer experience and with the help of technologies like machine learning and artificial intelligence to achieve such a better experience. Before getting into healthcare, by joining the US healthcare consortium Kaiser Permanente about 10 years ago, Ashima worked in financial services at JP Morgan as well as Fidelity Investments, already in those days dealing with technology solutions. And originally, she studied computer science in Delhi and Ghaziabad in India, and recently completed the executive medical education program at Harvard Medical School back in 2018. So listening to myself, to this introduction, Ashima, big thanks already for joining me today from the Bay Area. I'm really very much looking forward to our conversation.
Thomas, thank you so much for this generous introduction. Truly humbling to be here today and talking to you.
The pleasure is really on my side, because when I went through your very impressive career that you had until here, which includes obviously positions in very diverse industries, there is one big thing that runs through, like, let's say, the common threat, which is your focus on technology. Could you help us shed some light on what to you personally makes technology so fascinating, and also whether you anticipated kind of the giant leaps that we have seen in technology over the past decade since you started out?
That's a great question, Thomas. So technology is something I've been passionate about for as long as I can remember. My passion in the field of computer science started truly when my dad exposed me to a local computer science class. It was a very small class, maybe 5-6 kids, and he was influencing me to really get into computer science, and this was his way of getting me exposed to the world of computer science. And from there, there has been no looking back. I believe exposure in computer science earlier on helped shape my thinking, but also the instant gratification that you get. And I realize now we don't see that the things don't move that quickly. Mm-hmm. But in my view, moving people from consumer to creators is what computer science is all about. You can create something, you can see the results, and that's fascinating. And as I said, there's no looking back, and the impact and the profoundness of technology in our lives it continues to unfold and impacts us in a way never imaginable before.
That is very interesting to see on what made you go into this profession. And you left the financial sector where you started out first about 10 years ago, and then diving into healthcare. What made you basically shift gears there from a world of banking, investments, and businesses to be made to one of diseases, diagnostics, and treatments? And what made that switch in your life happen?
So as you mentioned, Thomas, I've studied both bachelor's and master's in computer science, and my first job was as a programmer. And when you start your job, you really don't pick your industry. And it was just by happenstance, I joined Fidelity Investments. And then that became the career. And then later on, I moved on to JP Morgan Chase, which is a bank. FinTech, as we call it back then, it was finance industry. It's a fascinating world. In fact, the first two patents that I have are in the field of applying tech in the world of banking. Things move at a faster pace, and there's plenty of opportunity to grow and see your idea transform from inception to becoming a product to distribution. It's a very, very fast-paced industry. So I was enjoying it, and there was, in 2008, a sudden loss of my dad due to his health reasons made me take a deeper look into what types of problems I want to help solve by leveraging technology. It's all about problem solving, but that made me kind of think about how should I be spending my time going forward. There was that need to commit to a larger purpose, and can we, you know, work in a small way and make a difference to help people lead a healthier life? So that has been my journey in healthcare. The other thing I learned was the people are in healthcare are incredibly devoted to the cause. The kind of peers, the friends, and the industry stakeholders I work with. And you can see that in both inside and outside in how they spend time and how they devote their energy. And I find it pretty compelling. And it's a very small community and the commitment to the larger purpose. And that's something I've never seen before in the fintech. So it's both the purpose, the commitment, and also the people that you work with and the ability to make a difference and the impact that we are all really driving towards. It's unseen. At least I didn't see that in fintech.
And while you're saying that that switch from fintech into healthcare was a big step in the dimensions that you outlined, is there also some things that are in parallel between those professions and industries? Because me not coming from the fintech side, do you see some similarities from what experience the fintech industry, 10 years ago, that is currently ongoing with the digitization of healthcare?
Absolutely, Thomas. At the end, as I mentioned, the core is the problem solving. The technology components are the same. I was actually even using the same technology products from fintech to healthcare. There was absolutely no difference. I think one needs to think what type of problems that you want to help solve. Like what motivates you, what gets you out of the bed. And I think that's where I believe the healthcare's larger purpose and commitment you can really get behind and feel good about.
So basically the technology and the approach to solve problems is the same, but it's more where you want to make that difference and what motivates you, where you want to leave your mark in life. Now, Ashima, you are at Google Cloud, and of course, Google is one of the best known companies in the world and belongs to the very famous group of big tech corporations called GAFAM. But while we all know how to basically Google something, could you also help us describe, 3, 4, 5 sentences of what Google Cloud does?
Sure thing. So Thomas, you touched on that. Most people know Google as a consumer company, and we've been working hard for more than 2 decades to create products that delight and make it helpful for people to lead their lives. And you know those products, be it Google Search, YouTube, Gmail. In fact, we have 9 products that are in the consumer space, and they have over 1 billion users, each kind of a user base. So we have been doing and working hard in creating that consumer-oriented product. And a few years ago, what was realized back by the leadership that these products, but they all run on the same technology underpinning and technology infrastructure. So the vision became, can we democratize that infrastructure for innovation, not just by Google's own product, but by the industry? And Cloudway was coming in pretty strong. All that was then, think of it as the same infrastructure, the same problems that Google had to worry about: security, compliance, availability, scalability. The same problems are being faced by the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the Google Cloud was created, and we have not looked back. Our Google Cloud mission now has always been to provide a platform to support digital transformation using data and helping, in this case, from cloud healthcare perspective, healthcare industry reimagine how they can transform their business model digitally. Today, the benefit is the same technology that is available to Google's own developers is available to anyone around the world. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of cloud. That's the beauty of, you know, how you democratize innovation by making the same tech available to everyone. And on top of that, now, once you have the infrastructure, we are going deeper in the industry-specific innovation. And that's one of the charter of the group I lead, is creating industry-specific products, in this case for healthcare, to help healthcare industry leverage these and digitally transform themselves and giving those assets and tools. So innovating on top of the infrastructure is the industry veneer, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I own the product and solution strategy in creating helpful tools to help you accelerate the journey for our customers.
Touching upon those products, in your perspective, now looking, I don't know, 3-4 years down the road, what would be the 2-3 products that you would see that would make a very big difference in healthcare, both in quality as well as cost circumstances, probably?
I think that's a great question. And Thomas, I'll tell you, if you had asked me this question last year, my answer would have been different.
Can imagine, yeah, with all the happening in between now. Yeah,
so COVID has completely made us rethink and recalibrate our product and solution portfolio. So when we are building, and I am leading our product and solution roadmap and strategy, you look into what is the industry dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
And few themes have emerged, and we have changed and recalibrated our product portfolio in light of what we're hearing from our customers. And one of the trends, and no surprise, is around virtual care or digital care delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And during COVID, by the way, we had done this survey because we wanted to see how much of this telehealth demand or virtual care demand is going to be permanent versus it is perishable. And overwhelmingly, the response that we received globally, that this is here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as we are thinking about, our customers are thinking about not just during COVID, as their technology solution was spun up almost overnight, but post-pandemic recovery, what is going to be important? So virtual health and digital care delivery is at the top. The future is going to be hybrid, right? It's not just everything will become virtual. Everything is now telehealth. Health is very personal. Human touch is very important. But telehealth is not going away. Mm-hmm. Both consumers and physicians want to use telehealth in the future. However, the new model is going to be hybrid. I strongly believe it's a combination of both virtual and physical care. And the trick will be to incorporate both physical and virtual care. And the tremendous potential is around augmenting human productivity with AI. And artificial intelligence, right? When we talk about human fatigue, when we talk about the back-end processes, there's a lot of documentation in healthcare.
And,
you know, we say 80% of data is unstructured. Can we make sense of those documents, that unstructured data, those PDFs, those faxes that come in, automate that using, and there are technologies like document understanding from Google, where the underneath it's natural language processing, and we are doing medically tuned NLP, if you will, to understand the context of those documents in the industry specific domain. And again, those are all means to an end. An end here is, can we aid human productivity leveraging these tools? Can we assist with the human fatigue that comes from these repetitive tasks over and over again? I think that's a huge potential. So the goal of the project here is to help improve accuracy of diagnosis, help ensure accuracy of treatments, and ultimately, as I mentioned, is to assist physicians who are facing overwhelming volume of data when making diagnostics and treatment decisions, right? There's just too much data and the data is continuing to grow.
Yeah. And can I just probe into that a bit? Because you at the beginning also said the hybrid model in digital or virtual care delivery, also there from an efficiency standpoint, a lot could be gained. And I think of things like Amazon Transcribe Medical, for instance, where they are automatically transcribing conversations between a physician and a patient into an EHR record and taking out 80 to 90% of documentation time and giving that back to the doctor, right? And similar things are, I'm sure, also available in Google Cloud and others and more emerging. There are people that are claiming that digitization of healthcare is also kind of a humanization, a rehumanization of healthcare, because doctors, professionals are gaining time back to either invest into seeing more patients during a day or investing that also ideally into proper dialogue with the patient and really being a counterpart to the patient again rather than filling out documents. Having said that, I guess two things directly jump to mind. If we want to achieve this, obviously data standards will be of utmost importance. So you can move from system A to system B, from clinic A to clinic B, and always kind of be in the same system, be in the same mode without needing to retrain on too many systems, which is one. And secondly, we also need to train our doctors that are in the market already and the doctors yet to come from universities on believing in those technologies, using those technologies and applying it properly. Where do you see us going there? Are we how far advanced are we in kind of adoption of this? Or would you even disagree?
Well, let me say, I think you've said such a profound thing that digitization of healthcare is also humanization of healthcare. Beautifully said and 100% agree, Thomas. So I'll be using that line going forward. It's very profound.
Great. Thanks.
It's a profound one, right? Because you're right. We have built the systems. And when you look back, as of 2009 for the High-Tech Act, the EHR market was created. And the intentions were, it was well-intentioned, to digitize from paper to electronic. Like I grew up in India and a lot of time, we all have grown up with the handwritten notes from the doctors. And our health story today has changed from those handwritten notes to a digital digest with truly volumes yet to come, right? And that story for our health is not just the two times we visit the doctor. Mm-hmm. It is our lifestyle, it's our behavior, it's all that other data about us, and EHRs were not created with that in mind.
Yeah.
But over time, EHRs have also become the billing systems or the documenting system because they had to cater to the reimbursement and the payment models within the US. So I believe when we look forward from the EHR perspective, I think they are doing a fine job. They are being built and are supporting this dynamic in the industry and the reimbursements and billing, but it has also created a lot of burden on the doctor, as you're saying. So it's no longer when I'm seeing the patient, it's also recording what I saw the patient for. And it becomes onerous. Right? So, and when you look from the physician perspective, a lot of job satisfaction also kind of chips away when you are really about not just taking care of the patient, but also documenting the visit so that you get reimbursed or the health system that you're part of gets reimbursed. But that is important, right? That's how the payment models is built. So can we take that burden away? I think that's where you were alluding to, I 100% agree, the medical translation, medical transcription, where that burden is shifted away from when a patient and doctor are interacting. And that's a vision even for virtual care. Imagine when you and I are having this today, it's a virtual call. Someone is listening from the tech perspective, is understanding the right keys, the entities, the medication, and have created the note, that can actually go to the EHR with the right billing codes and also present it back to the physician that, okay, I've done maybe 70% of the job, can you edit? But it needs to be accurate enough, otherwise it'll create more burden. So now where the industry is, we are making leaps in this technology, especially speech to text, as well as natural language understanding. Understanding the entity, understanding the behavior within the entities and context and intent, and then creating the structured data or information out of that. I think that is where the future is going to be. Still early days, but tremendous progress. And those, as you mentioned, Thomas, it's about really, can we augment human productivity? Can we humanize it for them? Can we make it easy and not cause more fatigue for them?
Yeah. And you mentioned something very important also for the future healthcare, which is the so-called lifestyle data that we're all generating around ourselves by using our Siris and Alexas and all the smartwatches out there. And in such a technologized and digitized healthcare systems, we as patients or potential patients are likely to become more and more empowered by these technologies and hence also more and more, in my eyes at least, develop into customers and users of that, and with an increased self-confidence towards probably also our doctors in what we're suggesting for them to prescribe even in future. What's your opinion on that?
I think this is an area I'm very, very passionate about. Thomas, when I was at Kaiser, we had launched this remote monitoring for diabetes. It was a pilot with a certain set of population, and they were given glucose meter, Fitbit devices, and weighing scale. Because in the condition of diabetes, it's not just about taking metformin or your medication, it's a lot about lifestyle. And today, like 86% adults, and you know, the spending is on chronic condition. So it's both a business question, and it's also when you look, the chronic condition is impacting both the bottom line is also affecting people. And if you are having a chronic condition, it's a lifelong collaboration with your physician, with your case manager, with your nurses. And what we need is the tools to give them to empower and have that empathy. Both are important. We sometimes feel that we are empowering the patient, but giving them a plethora of apps and devices is not helpful. It's really being in their shoes and having that empathy, like what will be helpful? And you're absolutely right, when people take care of their own health or when they participate and have more knowledge about their own health, I think it improves. And we saw that in pilot where A1C dropped by a few, it was knocked down by a few points. And it was pretty encouraging that people appreciated that they are seeing the same data as a physician. So there was a care protocol for diabetic that you have to walk 3 miles, your calorie count needs to be below a certain number based on your BMI, as well as your medication. And all those data was then combined, a dashboard was created. Prior to that pilot, it was like the information was shared over the phone. So the case manager would have called them every 2 weeks or every month. It's a 20-minute phone call. And most of the time, the data was recorded on a paper. It never went back to the EHR. Now the world is different. Now with that, can we digitally create a digital health ledger for you, as an example, like your healthy lifestyle? And both physician and patient are looking at the same data, and I can see, you know what, you're right. I goofed up on weekend and I didn't exercise and I ate like 2 cupcakes, and I can see the trends. And I think people are looking for that insight. A diabetic knows that they have to eat healthy and they have to walk, but understanding their data, collecting their data, and presenting them with choices where there's an opportunity for more intervention is much more powerful.
In all this, and I know you are also a very fierce protector of data privacy, and in one of your statements, you talked about that it's paramount that security is considered right from the get-go, and it's not an afterthought in developing such solutions and presenting that to the patients or the customers out in the market. And back in January 2020, the California Consumer Privacy Act went into action, and it's not unfrequently described as one of the most comprehensive privacy legislations in the US. In Europe, data protection is obviously also a huge topic, both on the societal, but also on the regulatory level. I mean, seeing this and seeing that harmonization of data, but also harmonization probably of data privacy laws would be of importance. Where do you see that in the US? It's a very dispersed privacy law, at least to someone from Europe looking into that, that California is rather strict comparable to Europe. How do you see that in the US and more broadly?
You're absolutely right. It is one of the top and very critical requirement for us. We believe that the trust is created through transparency, and we want to be transparent about our commitments and what customers can expect when they move the data to the data cloud. And we have publicly spoken about those trust principles. Privacy, we know, especially in healthcare, it's critical. In fact, it's a non-starter if we can't give you those guarantees or those principles. So we have seven principles that we talk about very openly, very publicly, because we understand fully in that our customers' data is a patient's health data. It's critical to their business, and frankly, it's very critical to our business. So we take great care to keep it safe and under and give the tools so our customers can keep it under their control. Mm-hmm. And so the principles, you know, there are seven of them. So number one is security is important, right? Know that security comes first in everything we do. And so we promptly notify if we detect a breach of security that compromises any data. The second is control what happens to your data from the enterprise perspective. And there's a unique problem from Google's perspective that we have, that I'm often asked, do you combine this data for advertising? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I think here what happens is that people are mixing Google search engine, YouTube, Fitbit with Google Cloud, I guess, right? And this is what's not transparent to people, I guess, or at least not widely in the heads of people.
No, absolutely, Thomas. I think that's why I want to go on a record and say our customers own their data. Google Cloud does not process their data for advertising purposes. Mm-hmm. We adhere to independently verified security practices. We have many audits, like third-party audits and transparency report that are available to our customers. So it's not just us saying it. And also we publish the location of our Google data centers. Like I know data residency is important, especially when we're talking globally or internationally. Yeah. So we publish that pretty openly and we adhere to those. And we are adherents to recognize international security and privacy standard is certified and validated by independent auditors. So I think those are that is our commitment to our customers, and we owe it to them. And we understand this is critical. And as I said, it's not just critical for our customers. It's critical for our own business to give that assurance and to stand behind these principles. And we do.
Thanks very much for making this very clear. If I may just come back, because you so nicely talked about the various data perspectives and sources. There is the EHR, for instance, on the one hand, that sits a lot with the providers and the payers. There is disease knowledge and also clinical trial knowledge that very much sits with the pharma companies and the medtech companies. And there is a growing importance also of lifestyle, healthcare-related lifestyle data that sits also elsewhere. With Fitbit, with smartwatch providers, and you name it. And I personally see a lot of benefit if there is a convergence of interests obviously happening between those, because only then you can read into proper data and characterize a human being. But that merits some sort of partnerships. And I know that you're also having quite a series of partnerships with leading clinics, but also leading pharmas. What's your key takeaway from those kind of interactions and partnerships that you had until here?
As you said, right, the healthcare is no longer when you it's when you are in the doctor's office as like a sick care.
Yes.
The whole paradigm of the industry is changing. It is about moving from sick care to being health. And to do that, we need to be able to combine multiple different data points from a patient standpoint. And that's where a topic that I'm truly was very near and dear to my heart is the data interoperability. Mm-hmm. When we are talking about creating empathetic and empowering experiences from a patient's perspective, it's super hard, I can tell you that, to create mm-hmm. that connected experience because your data is so siloed across different departments and different systems. Some of your data is in different format. For example, HL7 or FHIR when it comes to EMR data. When you're talking about images, it's in some PAC system. And the standards are yet to be developed for this newly patient-generated data, which is your fitness profile, your steps, your glucose meter readings and things like that. That's why standards like FHIR are critical, or interoperability is critical, because you want to see patient as a whole human. Right? It's not just my medical record. And for us to be whole human, multiple of these data points need to be connected.
Yeah.
And that's where we will move from episodic to proactive care, and interoperability is core to this. And when you talk about digital health monitoring, creating new data streams that are relevant, listening to our patients in their daily lives, and that meaningful intervention. And today, when we all started this journey in the digital health, there are many, many different apps, but most of those apps don't connect to the patient's records in a more meaningful way. Right? So to me, creating a connected and empowering experience comes with different data standards, and harmonizing and understanding the different data standard is one of our core offering from a cloud perspective. So mm-hmm. Google Cloud Healthcare API, that's where I had invested a lot from the solution and product roadmap perspective, that we need to give tools to ingest data. So think of us as glorified plumbers, if you will, mm-hmm. ingest different data types. And it's been humbling. I have kind of tired.
let me ask you one thing then, because I think that harmonization and the data interoperability, having the beauty speaking to you from a Google Cloud perspective, if you kind of take Google Cloud and AWS and their cloud system and things like SAP Cloud and you name it, on a scale from 0 to 10 in terms of how this is harmonized, and you could take data from A to B and share it with C and have a seamless interoperable system, where would we stand currently on a scale from 0 to 10 in your perspective?
I would say we are maybe at 2 or 3. It's pretty hard. And that's where I think from a healthcare perspective, at least in US, we have the new rules coming out from CMS and ONC, because lack of seamless data exchange in healthcare has historically distracted from patient care. Like, we all know that. Mm-hmm. And that leads to poor health outcomes, it leads to higher costs. So CMS, which is the Center of Medicare and Medicaid, they have this final rule that came out earlier this year mm-hmm. to help break down these barriers in the nation's health system to enable the better patient access. And now the industry is really looking for embracing these rules, and we from the cloud, as a cloud community perspective, we are looking at investing in giving these tools, because it's not easy, even if there's a noble intention to make data interoperable and give an API level access. That's what the rule calls for. Mm-hmm. And the tooling doesn't exist. It's not easy. The formats are different, different EHR vendors. And then on top of that, there's different types of data. So we talked about the healthcare data, but think about my access to my claims or my encounter information. Now, your claims, if you look into it, it has wealth of information, at least in the US, including, you know, cost, how much I paid. So the holy grail that can we combine the claim data in conjunction with clinical data and offer a broader and more holistic understanding of a patient's or individual interaction with the healthcare? I think that will lead to better decision-making, that will lead to better health outcomes, and we are very, very early days on that.
And Ashima, as you know, and also during the pre-conversations that we had and also when prepping for today, you know that I'm working a lot also with more kind of the traditional side of the healthcare system, talking about the pharma companies, the biotechs, the medtechs, and surrounding providers and payers sometimes. What I'm seeing and hearing there is if they could borrow something from the tech side, from the new kids on the block, they would borrow your customer-centric approach. They would borrow your success-proven IT and data analytics capabilities that you've shown elsewhere. But first and foremost, they would also be very much interested in kind of borrowing your entrepreneurial culture and spirit, coming to work with the appetite for adapting every day and seeing that as a core capability. Now, comparing that into your world, what would you borrow from those more traditional pharma and medtech players if you could?
That's a great question, Thomas. When I work with our customers, both from pharma, payers, providers, I think there's an overarching theme, and I think the people are truly committed to the cause. And they have this overarching, intense, you can call it desire to really help the patient. The right intention, right motivation from a people perspective, and that's something that inspires me. A lot of our customers, we work very, very closely with them. We work alongside with them, and the mission and the purpose filled path that the different companies are leading, it's inspiring. We are here for the right reasons. I think I continuously learn from them. The second is, from where I sit now, and I've come from the industry, I think sometimes that obsession over consumers is something that we have learned the art of, like what will be helpful, but there's still some blind spots we have, right? When we're looking from the patient perspective, and at the end, no matter how great the tool we build, we are not a healthcare company, right? We do not know at the very core level how to take care of patients. And I think that's the synergistic combination where we want to work and create a kind of an ecosystem and participate from bringing our tools in the service of the big companies like pharma, payers, provider, and working alongside with them to help shape the care delivery of the future. I think that's my hope, and that's what I'm very, very passionate about.
But you mentioned very interestingly that phrase of ecosystem that you want to build and also be entrenched in, and that merits to me that you are not seeing kind of the traditional side of the healthcare system as competition, but rather potential partners to collaborate with. And when it comes to those partnerships, I mean, a lot of the traditional ones are, at least in my eyes, somewhat hesitant to partner up with someone like Google, Amazon, and else other players because of the sheer size of the company and the kind of the appetite to understand, obviously, more the diseases and the mechanisms of action to then apply that into algorithms to read into data and take proper looks into the insights behind the data. How do you see that, and how could you overcome this barrier?
I think in general, I agree, Thomas, there is a perception about tech, and we do a much better job in sharing and creating awareness around those. So there's that perception. However, I also will say that in my past 3 years, I've seen a significant shift in the industry. Mm-hmm. It used to be when, you know, even when I was in the industry, it was like, why cloud? We could do it better in our own data centers. We can do this. We don't really need to rely on a tech company because people want to be self-sufficient. And over time, what I've seen is there's a huge shift. Now they're not asking why cloud. Mm-hmm. That conversation is gone. It's now how cloud.
That is true. Yeah, true.
So now they are very much willing to work with us, and that conversation is changed because now they're seeing and they understand the tech's playing it, and that's the reason we are now entering into what I call very interesting making partnerships, like the one we did with the Mayo Clinic. There is that understanding that both sides have something to offer. Like Google is a leading AI machine learning company. We have capabilities, we have infrastructure that can really help democratize and present this tooling. And healthcare industry is now looking into, can we focus into innovation and what we do best? Like how do we take care of patients and bring those technologies and not kind of reinvent the wheel or maybe leapfrog with the capabilities and tool sets that is available to them? Mm-hmm. And COVID, frankly, has accelerated that by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
And so healthcare, you know, saw that. We all are, Tom is saying it differently, but that healthcare has seen, you know, years of transformation in the weeks. And we will continue to see that trend, that reliance on better technology and technology as an enabler and the need for an ecosystem. Like no one company can do it alone, right? Healthcare is too big a cause, too big a purpose. And that's where my hope is we can bring the ecosystem together and not just the tech and the industry, but different players even within healthcare.
Thanks for sharing that perspective. I very much agree to that. And if I look from an outside perspective and also listening to conversations, a lot of people are talking about the tech, right? And the techs entering healthcare. But at a closer look, and I take Amazon as an example here, Amazon to me is a company, Amazon Health, that is positioning more as a disintermediating player across the healthcare sector, taking different roles and kind of cutting out the middleman by nature in the US as an employer, being also a payer, moving towards provider by offering virtual primary care support, but also buying a pill pack and become a wholesaler. That is kind of a positioning as a disintermediating player. Now, taking a look at Google, Google Cloud and Google Healthcare, I would rather see your strategy around developing digital health solutions and being an enabler for others to develop those digital health solutions around virtual care, around augmentation of physicians and better decision making, but not so much in disintermediating, but giving better tools in the hands of those needing those. Would you agree to that, or would you see that totally different, obviously from a Google perspective?
Thomas, absolutely, and that's our strategy for Google Cloud in healthcare and life sciences. We believe in the power of ecosystems, and they create powerful forces that can truly reshape the healthcare delivery or healthcare trajectory, if you will. And we believe that we have the tool set, we have the capabilities, and I'll go back to the start of the interview. Google started as a consumer company, and
yeah.
Along the journey, we have created some amazing, incredible AI machine learning capabilities. And there's a passion. Can we apply those same capabilities in the world of healthcare? Can we create those tools? Because we are not a healthcare company by ourselves, and neither do we intend to be. We want to be very core to who we are, and we are we have expertise in technology. So, that's where we define ecosystem as a set of capability and services that we can offer to that value chain participants, and be it providers, be it payers, be it pharma companies, in terms of, you know, data wrangling, data analytics, AI, machine learning, that we can, and you mentioned even culture too. So that's the reason one of the key tenets of our Mayo partnership was we actually opened an office in Rochester, which is now a little bit in a soup because of 2020 and everyone is working from home.
Yeah, true. Still, yeah. It rarely happens to me to have such an innovative mind, obviously, with me and around me, and especially on the podcast, of course. So allow me one final question. If we would re-meet in about 10 years from now, let's say 2030, we would meet and you would look back jointly with me over the last 10 years in healthcare, what by that time in our conversation in the future would have been, in your perspective, the biggest advancements, the biggest surprises in your perspective?
Thomas, that's a very good question. I would answer it both, not just from a tech perspective. What we saw during COVID is an unprecedented collaboration. Mm-hmm. What we saw during COVID is unprecedented, coming out of inertia and people participating and collaborating that I've never seen before. Right? They're tremendous.
Everyone open, yeah.
Right? And never has anyone united people toward one single cause like COVID has. And what I want to look back after, 10 years looking back is that COVID changed how the industry paradigm shifted and how we all can work together to solve and rise up to the occasion and solve problems together. This is not, healthcare, especially healthcare, it touches, all of us. It's a human endeavor. And can we bring these capabilities together? And collaboration is key. And I think to me, if COVID changes that, we should be all very grateful that there is that silver lining that brought the industry together like never before. And world's leading scientists, researchers, pharma companies, policy making, all working together one common cause and rising up to the occasion to solve this invisible enemy that we all are facing. I think that's my hope. We will see, of course, advancements in AI machine learning. They will become mm-hmm. more mainstream, moving from bedside to bedside, if you will. Mm-hmm. The profound change that I've seen in the industry is that the working together and the whole ecosystem, it's a huge opportunity to tap
together
into this solution.
Yeah. And I like your phrase, collaboration is key. And what a great ending, I can only say, for this very insightful and honest conversation that we just had. And I can only say, let's work towards this. Making collaboration is key, a reality also in the years to come. And Ashima, really big thank you from my end for taking the time. I know it's a very precious time and schedule that you're on, and highly appreciated your open and honest sharing of thoughts and giving us all inspiration here.
Thomas, thank you for having me. Truly honored to be here. Thank you for the generous introduction and giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts. Stay well and be well. Thank you.
So with that said, thank you very much for listening in today's episode. I hope you found it as enjoyable as I did with Ashima. I'm already looking forward to upcoming conversations in the days and weeks to come. But until then, stay safe and have a good time. Thank you and bye-bye.
Strategy and Strategy made real.